The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, offering NPR news and public radio programs since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's show, a 15th century manuscript is now part of special collections at the University of Arkansas. We'll find out how it got here and how it will be shared with the University of Arkansas community later. First, Canopy Northwest Arkansas, an agency of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, has managed to resettle dozens of refugees in its first year of operation. This, despite limits placed on it by the Trump administration. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to meet one of the families, the Mwendas, forced to flee their Civil War-torn Congo Mountain village.
Highlighter? She has a highlighter.
Oh, highlighter.
Light. Watada Mwenda and his spouse, Safi Nyasa, repeat English words and phrases during a morning class at Ozark Literacy Council in Fayetteville after the couple agreed to meet up at Canopy. The Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service Agency resettled the Mwendas and their family when they arrived in Fayetteville July 5th. Safi speaks only Swahili, but Watada, who is 64, speaks fluent French, and so does Canopy Executive Director Emily Crane-Lynn, who translates for us. Watada Mwenda begins by naming his children, all 11 of them he and Safi were raising in the rural mountain village of Swima along the southeastern edge of Congo before their lives were upended.
Leticia Mwenda, Jules Mwenda, Seti Mwenda, Biombe Mwenda, John Ferruzzi.
John Ferruzzi,
And then Asukulu Mwenda, Mumunga Mwenda, Josephina Richard, Jocelyn Richard, Musa Mwenda, and Baraka Mwenda. Yes.
Back home, Watada Mwenda ran a successful business selling livestock and minerals to support his large family. But in 2009, the family was targeted by Congolese militia who murdered one of the sons, his son's wife, and kidnapped Watada. The rest of the family escaped. Missionaries later found Watada's tortured body by a roadside, provided him medical treatment, and reunited him with his family. Afraid to return home, the Mwendas crossed the border into Malawi, taking refuge at a United Nations camp. There, father and son set to work scavenging and selling cut timber for income and applying for permanent UN refugee status in the United States. In late 2016, they learned they would be dispatched to Northwest Arkansas. They came with 9 children. 2 more await processing. The 4 youngest ones enrolled in Fayetteville Public Schools. The 5 eldest sons all have jobs and are studying to pass their GED. We asked Watada Mwenda to compare the Ozarks to the Congo.
Yeah, so he said it's really, you can't even compare the two. they're so different. But here in Arkansas, it's a good country. We sleep well, we eat well, we feel safe. We have a good life here.
Watada Mwenda has also found employment.
Yes, I have a job. I'm not making too much money, but I do have a job, and I'm grateful for that. I work in a hotel restaurant.
But his dream American job?
So as of right now, I haven't earned enough money to, you know, have the capital to start a business. But I'm working on saving that for that because I'd like to get into the business of selling precious stones here. We have a lot of precious stones back in the Congo, and I can't go back to the Congo, but I know a lot of people who are coming and going to Malawi, and I could get a business going where I could sell precious stones here in the U.S., and that's my plan. I just have to get some capital.
The Mwendas must leave soon to work, but they asked to share 2 final concerns.
One concern is that my daughter, Leticia, who is still in the camp in Africa, her husband just passed away. And I am very concerned for her now that her husband is passed, how I really want her to come join me here in the U.S. now more than ever. And my second concern is for my son, John, who has had some complications and has not been able to travel to this day. These are my two biggest concerns.
Concerned Canopy Resettlement staff says Executive Director Emily Crane Lynn are monitoring from their new headquarters near Gregan Township in Fayetteville. Previously, the nonprofit was housed by the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. Canopy has 3 full-time staff and several part-timers. A portion of their budget is funded by the federal government, a third from grants, and the rest from private donations. And despite immigration restrictions imposed by the Trump administration, Canopy met half their quota their first year of operation, ending September 30th.
We've resettled 54 individuals from 5 countries in our first year. So we feel pretty proud of that.
The refugees came from 5 different nations.
The Democratic Republic of Congo, El Salvador, Iraq, Burma, and Cameroon. So it's like a melting pot here. It's really fun.
Crane Lynn says clients are living in Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Fort Smith, and Clarksville. The resettlement process under contract with the U.S. State Department takes around 3 months.
Basically, in those first 3 months, it is a whirlwind. We are getting them signed up for Social Security cards, enrolled in English classes, kids are going to school, they're getting a health screening. They're already all set up in a furnished apartment from the time they get here, so that's taken care of for them. We also help them apply for any public assistance they might be eligible for, food assistance, Medicaid, so they can, get that kind of boost to get started. And then pretty much everything else focuses on employment, because at the end of those 3 months, they have to be able to pay all their own bills by themselves.
Clients meet daily with Canopy's employment specialist for job readiness training, resume writing, and developing job prospects.
We've got folks working in the poultry industry, in hospitality, but also, we've got somebody working as a mechanic, and we've got someone working in a preschool. So, most of the jobs, at least initially, are more service jobs. Folks don't usually have a ton of English or maybe a lot of work history. So that's usually where they start out. But then, from there, we've seen folks transition to more, skilled labor, higher earning jobs.
As qualified permanent residents who can apply for citizenship, certified U.S. refugees are qualified for Medicaid coverage. Crane Lynn says much was accomplished their first year of operation, but due to political challenges, they failed to meet their goal of resettling 100 clients in 2017.
We started out the fiscal year under the Obama administration with a goal of resettling 110,000 refugees throughout the whole country. And then midway through the year, the new administration, really set that goal a lot lower.
Referring to the Trump administration's strict executive actions on immigration and refugee entry, Crane Lynn says right now, 23 million UN-registered refugees await resettlement in places like Europe, Asia, and the U.S., and additional 10 million are displaced by conflict or famine. A majority of refugees are from Sudan, Syria, and Afghanistan. Emily Crane Lynn says the Mwenda family arrived just as the Trump administration barred refugees with no bona fide U.S. relations from entering the U.S.
And they would not have been permitted to travel except that there was like some sort of a window for folks who were already booked to be allowed to come. So they squeaked in, I think, the day before the ban took effect.
Canopy's also been forced to adjust its second-year resettlement goals to meet Trump's restrictions.
And he set that number at 45,000, which is the lowest it has ever been. Previously, the lowest number was 67,000. That was set by President Reagan, and it has never gone below 67,000 since then. So, it's really pretty dramatic decrease. And meanwhile, the number of refugees worldwide has shot up dramatically. So there's, you know, we're heading in the opposite direction of where we should be as a country. And that's, so that's been pretty devastating to everybody in the resettlement community and kind of baffling, because it's hard to make sense of why we would be retreating from a global crisis. That's never something that we've done as Americans. That's not how we operate. But that's what we're doing in this situation, and it's pretty hard.
Canopy's expecting to resettle 100 more refugees this coming fiscal year. The agency has more than a dozen churches ready to co-sponsor 18 families. But for now, new refugee resettlement is on hold. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And at Ozarks at Large, we have a link that will take you to a New York Times article published this summer that profiles the Mwenda's journey from Congo to Arkansas. That's at ozarksatlarge.com.
I'm Robin Young. Anthony Bourdain says he's no activist, but he became one for Wasted, a new documentary about food waste.
This is an area, this is an issue that goes fundamentally against my instincts as a longtime working cook and chef, where we were taught from the very beginning that one just does not waste food.
Next time, here and now.
Beginning at 1 on 91.3. The latest production from Theater Squared, The Champion, opens later this week. The world premiere from playwright Amy Evans brings back to life an incident in the legendary singer Nina Simone's life when she and her band were in a restaurant in North Carolina. Thursday night at the Fayetteville Public Library, I'll moderate a conversation with Evans, as well as the play's director, Reginald L. Douglas, and Al Shackman, who is Nina Simone's band leader and an important character in the play. That conversation will begin at 6 Thursday night in the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's absolutely free. You can come join us for a rare chance to meet the principals involved in a world premiere play at the Fayetteville Public Library Thursday night. And you can find out much more about the run for Theater Square's The Champion at theater2.org. And later this month, actors from the play and music students at the University of Arkansas will present scenes for The Champion and perform some of the songs from the catalog of Nina Simone. The music students will be under the direction of our friend Jake Herzog, music faculty member at the U of A and a jazz guitarist. That event is Monday, October 30th at the Honors College House on the University of Arkansas campus. It begins at 6 that night, the 30th. It too free, but seating is limited, so an RSVP is requested. You can reserve your seat at honorscollege.uark.edu. Still ahead on today's Ozarks, the Militant Grammarian gives us a quiz about lesser-known words.
Now be careful with this one.
Okay.
Formication.
The Militant Grammarian, uncommon words, and a pop quiz still to come on today's show. General improvement funds doled out by the Arkansas legislature for the past few decades are again under scrutiny. An ongoing investigation of how the funds were distributed by some legislators is resulting in one guilty plea from a former Northwest Arkansas legislator and charges against others. The Arkansas Supreme Court is also putting the funds into the news this week. So Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about this and other matters.
The Supreme Court has now declared unconstitutional a way they were taking surplus funds and spending it, rather than the concept. I think that's fair to say.
That is true. That
say.
Is a much more
this,
accurate
This
way.
Idea of taking money and essentially funneling, and I use the word laundering it, through the planning and development districts as if it's the planning and development district money to distribute, when there's an unwritten understanding that it's the legislator's money and they will dictate how it's used, that violates the Constitution, and it violates the principle that the legislature appropriates, but the executive branch executes and administers the spending. I was driving through Southwest Arkansas over the weekend, where a lot of my family's from. I was speaking to the Howard County Democrats, and I went through small town after small town, turned off the interstate and went that way. And the activity I saw, and the finest structures I saw in a lot of these little towns, were either the community center or the volunteer fire department. They seem to have some very nice, well-equipped volunteer fire departments. And that's general improvement money. These, without home rule and without capital in these small towns, they need state help. And it is a legitimate state purpose to help provide those things
right.
to poor local rural communities. Fire protection is an important thing.
Helps lower the insurance ratings, sure. bring down the cost.
And it's a legitimate state purpose. What they've got to do, they can do it if they have the discipline. They can do it legally by setting up some state agency, Office of Local Partnership within DFNA, setting up a rigorous application process, an objective grading process, approving, and I think requiring a match. I think local communities ought to ante up 3%, 5%, something, and then letting the governor pick from the top of the list as surplus funds become available and let the legislature review it. Not approve it, that'd be illegal, but review it. It can be done.
All right, another recent column of yours, I believe it was your Sunday column, talked about the National Rifle Association, their support for bump stock banning, banning bump stocks. You say it's disingenuous. Tell me why.
Well, it's disingenuous. It's also very smart. Basically, you know, do you know there's a gun rights group to the right of the NRA?
I did not until I read your column.
The gun owners of America, they make the NRA seem moderate. And the gun owners of America had said, no, we'll cut and we'll tolerate no regulation tightening of these bump stocks. Gun rights are gun rights. And the NRA... You and I talked last week, I think, how they, a political story, how they'll go dark for a few days after an incident like this and survey the landscape and figure out what to do.
I'm glad you were listening to me.
Of course I was listening. This, what they did was politically, a great political finesse. They said, we believe that the bump stocks need to be more tightly regulated. By saying they need to be more tightly regulated, they took it out of legislative hands, spared Republicans from having to cast a vote that they might feel obliged, which is to ban these things, but get crossways with the gun owners of America and get some bad mailers and bad grades back home. So the NRA said, we can be handled in a regulatory manner. At the same time, the real thing we need to do, they said, is pass our reciprocity bill so you can carry your concealed weapons from one that allows it to one that doesn't. Whenever the NRA appears to concede, what they will in fact be doing is putting more guns and more holsters in more places.
Your contention.
Well.
Which is fact-based, based on your research.
Okay, I mean, that just comes.
There'll be some that will argue against you on that.
But I'm praising their intelligence and their trickiness and their effectiveness. But here's what's going to happen. The NRA, by trying to spare a legislative vote on this and trying to do it administratively, got in crossways with Dianne Feinstein, who wants to put in the bill and says it has to be done by legislation. They're going to end up arguing, and we're not going to do anything, even though there is popular will and legislative will, to at least say, no, you can't turn your semi-automatic into an automatic. I mean, the will is there, but Republicans in Congress don't want to have to vote for it. Feinstein doesn't want to consent merely to a regulatory fix, which she considers inadequate. And because of our political dysfunction, again, we'll probably end up with nothing. And guys like this monster in Vegas will continue to have the opportunity to attach this thing to their guns and kill more people. That's what's wrong with our... It's not just that we're polarized culturally. It's that we break down in these legislative procedures with three or four angles coming together and eliminating any ability to get anything done. I hope that doesn't happen, but I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the framework for it here.
And the other side can't let the other side get a victory.
Right.
Is kind of what it comes down to.
So a thing that they could do if they'd just all sit down and shut up, they won't do because of the competing angles, not because of the substance, not because of the public interest, but because of the competing angles.
John Brummett is a political writer with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and he talks almost every week with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can also read Brummett's columns at ArkansasOnline.com, and you can hear more from the conversation and read about state news around the clock at TalkBusiness.net.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by contributors who have left planned gifts to this station. Many listeners to KUAF have made giving to their public radio station a part of their end-of-life planning, and a planned gift in a will, annuity, or living trust to KUAF ensures that our programming will be here for generations to come. To learn more about how you can leave a legacy to future generations of KUAF listeners, visit KUAF.com/leave-legacy.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellams. Scott Pruitt, director of the Environmental Protection Agency, is expected to announce the beginning of the rollback of the Clean Power Plan today. The Obama-era regulation sought to reduce the carbon dioxide emissions from power plants, but the implementation was stayed after a ruling from the Supreme Court. Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge was part of a 29-state coalition challenging the plan. Spokesman Judd Deere read a statement on behalf of the Attorney General's office.
By ending this plan, the EPA will hopefully return to the drawing board, seeking input from the states in order to craft a common sense, lawful rule that protects the environment and the American people.
Glenn Hooks, president of the Arkansas chapter of the Sierra Club, says the announcement is a setback, but the organization plans to challenge the repeal.
It's important to also note that the president does not have the power to repeal the Clean Power Plan with the stroke of a pen. This was a federal law that was passed through all the appropriate administrative procedures, and it's a final plan. The public should not misunderstand what happened today. They started a process, and it's a long process that all of us are going to have an opportunity to weigh in on.
Currently, only 5 power plants in Arkansas are coal-burning plants, which would have received substantial reductions under the Clean Power Plan. Environmental advocates are panning Arkansas U.S. Representative Bruce Westerman's Resilient Forest Act as an effort to greenlight clear-cutting of wide swaths of public land without public input. The Republican congressman from Hot Springs touted his bill last week as a means to reduce wildfires and promote forest health. But Rita Spivak with the Center for Biological Diversity says that's not how she sees it.
This bill is nothing but a gift to the timber industry that would significantly increase logging across all of our national forests, not just Arkansas, and BLM lands across the country. The bill calls for logging sometimes up to 30,000 acres or 46 square miles without any public input into how our American public lands are managed, or scientific review of harms that come from logging, impacts water and wildlife.
The Arkansas Sierra Club opposes the congressman's forestry bill on similar grounds. A previous version of the 4th District Congressman's bill passed the U.S. House last year, but was not taken up by the Senate. Congressman Westerman says he's optimistic the 2017 version will get approval. 7 World War I memorial trees will be planted across the state with the cooperation of the Arkansas World War I Centennial Commemoration Committee and the Arkansas Forestry Commission. The commission will donate 2-year-old willow oaks for the plantings. Approved locations include the University of Arkansas Campus Arboretum in Fayetteville, the City Park in Rudy, Bradley Park in Jasper, and along a trail in Russellville. The supporting organizations eventually want a memorial tree planted in each of the state's 75 counties. The city of Bentonville will host the 14th annual tree giveaway this weekend. The city's Tree and Landscape Advisory Committee will offer about 400 trees to city residents Saturday from 8 to noon at the Downtown Activity Center. 10 different species are included in the giveaway, designed to help increase the city's overall tree canopy. A grant from the Walton Family Foundation helped fund the event. More information can be found at BentonvilleAR.com. And Pettigean State Park is being recognized as the Arkansas Region 5 State Park of the Year. Joe Buckley, the superintendent for the park in Morrilton, says the park had a 75% increase in volunteers this past year and completed 15 major maintenance projects under budget.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Arkansas Community Foundation's Smart Giving program can create positive change in local communities. Thousands of Arkansans have established funds at the Community Foundation to support the causes they care about. Smart Giving to Improve Communities. arcf.org/smartgiving for more.
The National Archives take great care preserving many of the most important documents in American history. The Washington, D.C. agency includes automatic bunker homes for the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution in case of emergency. Special collections at the University of Arkansas may not be quite that high-tech, but one of the missions of special collections is to make documents, like papers and letters involving J. William Fulbright, diaries of early Arkansans, and rare books, accessible to researchers and students. Recently, a new edition arrived at Special Collections. We asked 2 Joshuas to explain the details surrounding the manuscript. Joshua Byron Smith is an assistant professor of English and the associate director of the Medieval and Renaissance Studies program at the University of Arkansas. And Joshua Cobbs Youngblood is a research archivist and outreach librarian for the University of Arkansas Library's Special Collections. Joshua Byron Smith says the manuscript marks a first for Arkansas.
The University of Arkansas, Special Collections of the University of Arkansas in particular, has purchased a complete medieval manuscript. And now we have the only full medieval manuscript that is in the state. There used to be a small collection of medieval manuscripts in Little Rock. It was a private collection, but it was sold some decades ago. And so now we are the proud owners of the only medieval manuscript in Arkansas.
And the title of this medieval manuscript is?
Well, it's a Bohemian Burial Psalter. I'll let my scholarly colleague over here correct me on my pronunciation if I get something wrong. But yeah, so it's a psalter from the 15th century. And so when we describe it and we make it available and we put it in the library catalog, we'll call it a burial psalter, Bohemian in origin.
So help me break down those three words.
So it's Bohemian, so it's from the area that is Bohemia, so Central Europe now. A ferial psalter, so a psalter is probably the most important book in Christianity for 1,000 years. A psalter contains just the Psalms, and for medieval Christians, the psalter was the most important book of the Bible. If you knew how to read the Psalms, you could get you could read allegorically Christ into them. If you learned how to read Latin, the Psalter was your first book. So if you were a monk, if you were a nun, if you indulged in private devotion, then you would say all of the Psalms, 150 Psalms, in a couple weeks. You could get through those. So they knew them by heart. So the Psalter was one of the most important books in medieval Christianity, and they produced lots of individual Psalters. A ferial Psalter is a psalter that's not organized numerically versus one, like Psalm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. A ferial psalter puts them in the order that you will need them for the liturgy. So every day has a particular assigned set of readings in liturgical Christianity. And you would look in the something like a lectionary to find out what psalms you're supposed to say for morning devotion. And those aren't going to be 1, 2, and 3. They're going to jump around. And so the ferial psalter puts those in the order that you need them. So you don't even have to skip around. You can just go in the order of that you need them. So it was kind of a useful innovation. Instead of having to flip around, look at 3, then try to find 142, you can just go. The order's already made for you. So it's a pretty common book, but one of the reasons we wanted to purchase a common book is for the teaching value. Because it is common, we can use it to teach lots of different things to our students at the university.
So it's important in its day. It's important now in 2017 for the University of Arkansas?
Well, absolutely. So not every university has the privilege or the chance to acquire one of these. We've gotten the chance to do that, so it's exciting for us. It's really exciting for the University of Arkansas Libraries because it shows how we can support the teaching faculty on campus, how we can support student growth, how we can support new and growing programs. And so we, for several years, we've been working with Josh Smith and other scholars in the Medieval Studies program, and in the English department, History department, in Visual Arts, to use medieval documents. So, it's part of our collection development strategy. So the library helps support collection development in lots of different ways. We buy lots of stuff on Arkansas history. We buy lots of stuff in chemistry and, communications, English. But then we also have to buy special objects and special materials. And so in special collections, we do that through rare books. We do that through manuscript material. And sometimes we get the opportunity to get some really, really special and unique things. So in the last several years, we've been buying facsimiles, or very nice copies of medieval documents, and we've been working with Josh Smith and other faculty on campus to do that. And we've gotten some really great stuff. We've actually purchased more than 20 facsimiles in the last few years, in the last 5 years. Everything from books of hours to psalters to gospels to some things outside of Christianity, to a Quran, a Haggadah, and some really marquee things, but they're facsimiles. And so the experience for the students is good and it's great. It's something that we haven't been able to offer before, but it's a little bit different. And so because of the teaching and research development and growth that's happening on campus, the time was right for us to go after a more marquee item, an original, a complete codex. So working with Josh a couple of years ago, we actually got a couple of individual leaves. We got, was it 12?
I think 12, and then a few more.
A few more since then. So these are fragments of medieval documents, so not complete ones, but and some really, really nice things. And we're able to host his classes and classes from other faculty several times each semester to work with those. But then as we're doing other areas, we're trying to go into other areas, like the history of the book.
I want to know, what do we know about this book?
Yeah. We don't know a whole lot because we haven't had it that long.
It didn't come with a lot of description, so we're not exactly sure what we're going to find. I've only examined it for maybe 3 minutes. It's brand new on campus, so it is a beautiful Psalter. It has very early binding, which is pretty rare. And honestly, it's probably going to be an item that two of my colleagues, Laura Walsh and Mary Beth Long, are going to be really interested in from a research angle to see what they can find out about this Psalter. So I don't really know yet. So that's an area for more research.
Being in the library, I have got to work with it a little bit more, although it's not an area of concentration as a researcher for me. My areas of concentration are way out of scope for that for research. But as a collector and a rare books librarian, it's fascinating. And so I've been studying it from that angle. It's a small object. And so, you know, if something that you would just see passing down the street, you think, oh, that's a little book. But it's a very special book. It is beautiful. Josh mentioned the binding. So the binding is not the approximate date for the book is about 1450.
1450, okay.
So, which makes it technically the oldest complete book that we have in the library now. We did have a couple of other 15th century books that are print books, so this is now our oldest complete book. And the binding's almost close to that period, so when you're thinking about, like, some of the teaching I've seen Josh do of how's a book constructed, you know, what all goes into, what's the process beginning to end, what's the content versus what's the material value or the aesthetics of this thing, it's fascinating. Just a little anecdote about that. So we're keeping it in a vault right now. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of vaults in the library. And so I was taking it from one vault down to show Josh, actually, and some other people in special collections, and start doing some initial evaluation of it, you know, how we're going to treat it and how we're going to talk about how we're going to unveil it. And as I passed somebody in the hall, they immediately turned and looked, because it's not the sort of object you're used to seeing in a university library. And just right away, like, whoa, what is that? And just that take from somebody that didn't know what I had in my hands.
And so this is not going to be kept. You mentioned it's kept in a vault now, but it will not reside. I mean, it's going to be out for instruction and examination and.
Well, so there's considerations in there.
Well, of course. I don't mean that I can just walk in after eating a chocolate bar, but I mean it's not part of a collection that is then just mothballed.
Yeah, exactly. Mothballed, or the contrast to mothballed, is, I think, a really good way of looking at it. So we think of our collections in special collections at the U of A libraries as active living collections. That part of that is we're growing our collections all the time. So when we have opportunities like getting the first complete medieval codex in the state of Arkansas, we want to take that opportunity. We also are acquiring archival material from, you know, Arkansans, from politicians, mm-hmm. from cultural figures. We do that work all the time. But it's also living in the sense of we're a student first university. We take teaching and we take scholarship and research very very seriously, and so we want to make things as accessible as possible. So just in special collections, you know, I mentioned Fulbright's papers. You can come in and work with Fulbright papers. I brought an undergraduate student to Fulbright papers yesterday. In fact, 3 days ago, I brought a middle school student doing a National History Day project into a box of Fulbright correspondence. This is something you could do in an archives, and it's something you could do in a rare books library. And we love that opportunity. Me personally, it's what I live for. It's why we do this work. But think of, like, the vault. What's in the vault? Is the Psalter going to be in the vault? Yes. Yes, the Psalter is going to live in the vault. But the vault comes open. And so I work with somebody like Josh, another teacher that wants to work with it, or a visiting class, and we'll open it up. Some of our facsimiles are really fine copies of medieval documents that we have. I also keep in the vault. That's purely just, you know, like a value-wise. Don't want it damaged. Don't want it to be checked out. Don't want it to be misplaced. But other things we have in there, in the U of A libraries, we have a first printing of The Origin of Species. So this is an incredibly valuable object, valuable in every sense of the word. We keep that in the vault, but it comes out because sometimes people want to look at it. And so even though we keep it cordoned off, we keep it protected, we want to make sure the preservation and access are our priorities we're using. We also want these to have some utility, to have some true value for the university, which is through teaching and research.
Yeah, I have to say they do a great job, Kyle. So I bring students in several times a semester, usually, and it's not uncommon for a student to come up to me a few weeks later and say, I like that stuff so much, I went back the next day, and they let me look at it again. And I love that about the University of Arkansas Hives. Yeah.
When something like the Psalter is arriving, how does it get here? Is it FedEx, UPS, USPS?
That's a great question.
How do you get it here?
That's a great question. Well, all those fine businesses you just mentioned all offer insurance. So there is special shipping that we do. So we often work with – the libraries will work with the bookseller or with an auction house, or sometimes there are larger entities that sell these sorts of things. For a special purchase like this, where there is literally no other example, we're going to work with the person that has it, right? Yeah. And then they'll work with us on shipping. So so part of what we do in special collections all the time is order archival collections, sometimes large, often small, or rare books as part of kind of our regular development. And we'll have to work with the seller to get it here and get it here in good shape. So we know what it looks like before it ships out. We know what it looks like when we get here. We report back. One of the things I have to do with all the rare books, including the Psalter when it showed up, was to go pull it out, inspect it, compare it to the pictures I received, reread the description again, kind of stop the shaking in my hands a little bit. Like, okay, this looks like exactly what they described to me. And so it's, you know, we checked it at every stage. But, yeah, it's a lot of foam peanuts, a lot of nice packing.
I imagine. What will happen at the reveal on the 18th? Do you know yet? Do you have
so we have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, we do. So it's going to start at 4:30 on the 18th at Carnal Hall, so right on campus. And the public is welcome. And there'll be some food and drinks, I believe a cash bar, and some appetizers will be provided. And there'll be remarks starting about 5:15, but not very many remarks, maybe like 7 minutes worth. A few of us will talk and give a little introduction. And then most importantly, the Psalter will be the guest of honor and will be out for public display. So,
but keep the drinks away.
Yes, I've been in touch with them about this. Yeah, so we have to keep the Psalter and the drinks far apart from each other. Yes.
We'll have a few other items probably from special collections there to kind of, again, like put it in context, show how it lives, how we're going to take care of it, show how it fits into our resources, but really make that the feature.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Joshua Cobbs Youngblood is a research archivist and outreach librarian for the University of Arkansas Libraries Special Collections, and Joshua Byron Smith is an assistant professor of English and the associate director of the Medieval and Renaissance Studies Program at the University of Arkansas. They discuss the new, complete medieval manuscript now owned by the University of Arkansas. The public debut of the manuscript will be October 18th at Carnell Hall on the U of A campus, beginning at 4:30. And tomorrow on Ozarks, just a bit more about archives as we take notice of American Archives Month this month, and how it will be observed Thursday on the U of A campus. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7.
Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico's small agricultural sector. In one hard-hit area of the island, a coffee plantation lost 90% of its crop as harvest season is beginning.
In this moment, we have a good market of the coffee, but really we don't have coffee to continue.
The long road to recovery for farmers in Puerto Rico this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith volleyball team is now 16-5 after a non-conference win over Harding University in Searcy last night. UAFS won the match in four sets. Next up, a road match in Wichita Thursday night against Newman University. The next home match, Tuesday at 6 p.m. against Southern Nazarene in the Stubblefield Center. The University of Arkansas men's golf team, ranked 16th in the country, fired the third lowest round in program history yesterday at the Jerry Pate Intercollegiate in Alabama. The Razorbacks recorded 23 birdies and a pair of eagles to finish just two strokes behind the best ever Razorback round that was set in 2003. The Razorbacks, despite that success, are still in fourth place after one day at the tournament, trailing three other nationally ranked teams. And if you're anxiously awaiting for college basketball season to arrive, a helpful sign, the annual Moonlight Madness event that serves as a preview of the season for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith women's and men's teams is Thursday night, beginning at 7. There will be three-point shooting contests, a dunk contest, and scrimmages, featuring players from the current squads. It all takes place in the Stubblefield Arena and is free. Both teams will play exhibition games against Division I opponents in early November, the women at Tulsa November 1st, the men at Middle Tennessee on the 2nd. A professor at the University of Arkansas is the 2017 winner of the National Communication Association's Diamond Anniversary Award. Lisa Corrigan is being honored for her book, Prison Power: How Prison Influenced the Movement for Black Liberation. The award is the highest handed out by the association, and Lisa Corrigan becomes the first professor at the University of Arkansas to be so honored. And this note for Ozark Regional Transit users in Fayetteville: ORT is, as of now, shifting a popular route from a flag-down route to a bus stop-only route. For years, Route 3 in Fayetteville has operated by would-be riders flagging down a bus to get on whenever the opportunity arose. Now riders will board only at permanent stops. ORT officials say the new system will be more efficient, and eventually all ORT routes will be bus stop only.
91.3 is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, dedicated to environmental responsibility and serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973. Pack Rat, offering clothing and footwear for urban and backcountry adventures, including camping, climbing, paddling, backpacking, and traveling. 521-6340, packratoc.com, or Facebook for more. Ukulele player and performer Jake Shimabukuro returns to Walton Arts Center Wednesday, October 18th at 7 p.m. Hawaiian-born, Jake has played since the age of 4, developing a style and talent that has drawn comparisons to Jimi Hendrix and Miles Davis. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, the militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Bet we're going to talk about grammar.
Sort of. Oh. We're going to talk about words.
Okay, well, words are good. Words are good.
We've done segments before on words that we thought we knew how to use properly but didn't.
Yes, and some of those were mind-blowing.
Yeah, well, get ready to have your mind
blown. Oh, excellent.
Recently, I ran across a list from Mental Floss of such words that, for the most part, I'd never heard. So the likelihood of my using them improperly was not high.
Because you weren't going to use
them.
They
were. Nevertheless, I think they are interesting to talk about. And, of course, to make it more fun for me, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yay.
About what they mean.
Fantastic.
I bet we both heard this one, and I'm pretty sure at one time I knew its actual meaning, but I had forgotten. Bodkin.
Bodkin. I know of Bodkin because The Who had a song or an album that had Bodkin in it.
Oh.
I'm not sure I know what it is, but I've always thought it was sort of a... an impish sort of character?
That's not what anybody thinks. Hamlet, it's in the to be or not to be soliloquy. Hamlet said, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin.
Yeah, well, I can't use context there, yes.
A lot of people think it's related to the body, or something. It is a dagger.
Oh, my.
So how does that fit in with...
Well, it was Odd's bodkin that I'd heard.
Hmm.
So guy's...
His knife.
Yeah. Okay. I always thought it was his... Wow. All right. I am a big 0 for 1 so far.
I'm not saying that these all are very useful
this is
words.
Fun. But, right.
All right. Here's one. Crapulous.
It's something that's not good. I don't know.
Well, it is not, as Bart Simpson fans might believe, the opposite of fabulous.
Right.
Bartson has the craptacular, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It means characterized by gross excess in drinking or eating. Hmm. It's being hungover.
Oh, I like
I'm
that.
I'm crapulous this morning.
Okay, I like that. That should be in the lexicon. That should make a comeback. Okay.
Crepuscular.
Is that something to do with biological? I want to say... We know where I went with bodkin. I want to say it has something to do with, like, starfish or something.
That very well could be close. It is not an oozing skin ailment, as it sounds, right?
All right, right.
It refers to twilight.
Oh.
Or to creatures active at twilight.
Yes.
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 Like
okay.
Bats, mosquitoes, and vampires.
Ah, very good.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think you were in the neighborhood. Now, be careful with this one.
Okay.
Formication.
Right. It's a planning session.
No.
No?
It means an abnormal sensation of, as of ants creeping over the skin.
Oh, so the chills, like, well,
I guess.
I mean, I'm not thinking that it necessarily has to literally mean ants, but you know, no, like, yeah. Oh, when you hear that
tingly kind of yucky, yeah, yeah,
formication, yeah.
Formication.
Mm, it is, yeah, a formication causing story.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I like this. These, yeah, are good.
Funambulist.
Funambulist. A funambulist.
You heard this one,
yes,
somewhere along the line.
Okay, wait. A somnambulist is a sleepwalker.
Right.
So it's a tightrope walker.
There you go.
Yes,
very
I had heard it.
Good.
When I was a kid, I heard this. The Wallendas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very, very good use of breaking the word down.
Yeah.
Getting the walker out of, yeah, out of it. Yeah.
I knew I'd heard it. Okay.
Mm-hmm, good. Here's one I heard in law school, and I use it often now. Fungible.
I've heard that. It seems like a very technical or something that it legal.
Like I say, I never, yeah, ever heard it until law school, but it's a pretty useful word. It's not related to fungus.
Okay.
It's a legal term describing goods or money that can replace or be replaced by equivalent items. However, it's also accepted, as I use it, interchangeable. Those things aren't fungible.
Oh, so.
Those ideas,
okay,
aren't fungible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a foreign country and I exchange my dollars for shekels,
that's fungible.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
Noisome. That's when I recognized, mm-hmm, the word, but I don't think I knew what it meant.
Well, it's not loud.
No.
I mean, that's too obvious, so. Mm-hmm.
Something even more offensive.
What is noisome?
Stinky.
Really?
Yeah, stinky, huh, or otherwise disagreeable. That's a noisome.
Oh, sure.
A noisome outfit you've got on there,
yeah,
today.
Okay.
Okay. Nugatory.
Nugatory.
Mm-hmm.
It is what is in a Snickers bar.
I don't know.
Nugatory.
It says it sounds creamy and delicious.
Right, right.
But it means unimportant, of no value or useless, futile. That argument is nugatory.
Ooh, I'm going to use that. Oh, I love these. I love when we do these. All right.
Now, I'm pretty sure you know this one, Kyle. Seems like we talked about it in a similar segment years ago. Nonplussed.
Nonplussed is the word that we all think we knew what it meant, but it didn't mean that. I forever thought nonplussed meant like a lackadaisical, mm-hmm, reaction. Like
unconcerned, unperturbed.
Right, mm-hmm, unmoved by, mm-hmm, that. But it actually means something close to the opposite,
yes,
right? Yeah.
Yes. Surprised,
right,
or confused.
No one uses it like that
to
now.
To the point of not knowing how to react.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not that you didn't care.
Right.
It's like you are flummoxed.
It surprised you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's one that was on the list, but not only am I familiar with it, I believe it must be the subject of a contract that college students sign. I doubt that I've ever taught a student who didn't use the word at least once in his college writing career. Plethora.
A plethora.
Yeah. Students use it all the time.
Yeah.
What is it?
I want to say, and I'm going to be wrong, that plethora and myriad are kind of equals.
And myriad? Not exactly. No,
okay.
It means an excess of something.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, myriad's close, but okay, that means more variety, right?
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But plethora does mean
a lot.
Okay.
An excess,
oh, all right.
Of something.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Opposite of dearth.
Right. So if you had a plethora cornucopia of ideas,
I think that would be redundant.
Right.
I think that's – well, which is probably the way most college students,
yeah,
use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Oh, they love it. They love,
yeah,
it. And finally, Kyle, one I bet you think you know.
Mm.
I thought I knew.
Mm.
I was wrong.
Mm.
Factoid.
Well, now I know I'm wrong because I think what all of us are thinking right now is a factoid is this small little trivial bit of information
and
related
that,
to a bigger
– And that's wrong. Norman Mailer, who coined the term,
really
said they were, quote, facts which have no existence before appearing in a magazine or newspaper, which is to say, facts that sound credible and are repeated often but have no basis in truth.
Oh, my goodness. We're in the factoid age.
Alternative facts.
Norman Mailer, ahead of the curve once again. Thank you.
You bet.
Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
On the next Fresh Air, Dexter Filkins talks about his article in The New Yorker, Rex Tillerson at the Breaking Point. We'll discuss the tensions between the Secretary of State and President Trump, the possibility of war with North Korea, the possibility of pulling out of the nuclear agreement with Iran, and the consequences of a greatly understaffed State Department. Join us.
Fresh Air every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, a new LGBTQ mentoring program has launched at the University of Arkansas.
For me, that was the biggest takeaway was we've hit on to something. I mean, we really have an opportunity to really address a major need across campus.
Details on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7, and then archived at ozarksatlarge.com. There you can find past full editions of Ozarks at Large, as well as individual stories. You can also listen to our show as a podcast through absolutely free services like iTunes and Stitcher, and, again, absolutely free, find past editions of the show through the KUAF app for smartphones and tablets.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Springdale. We'll end today's show with music from Shannon Wurst. Shannon will be hosting a family sing-along Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock at the 8th Street Market in Bentonville. It's technically, officially called the 8th Street Family Sing-Along, brought to us by Shannon Wurst, Bike Rack Brewing, Kind Kitchen, and Big Rub Urban Eatery. It's free. It begins at 4. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Countryside, falling in love feels like a million times, but there is one sure as a sun, steady as rays, true as it do when the day's begun. All the mountains give me strength, all the give me peace. Oh, it's you. Oh, it's you, river I need. I told the timber I'm tired of falling for you. I told the wolf deep in the night I ain't calling to you. Ooh, every crest, every crooked creek flows from the source straight to the heart of what's truly me. All the mountains give me strength, all the forest give me peace. Oh, it's you. Oh, it's you, river and